Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today, and hopefully you're having a relaxing and quiet holiday. Today, we're going to talk about Believe in Boswellia. That's an herb. And then we're going to talk about vitamin C can boost the effectiveness of acute myeloid leukemia treatment from the Van Andel Research Institute in Denmark. We're going to talk about how green tea is helping to prevent life-threatening artery explosions from Kyoto University. And from the Central Institute of Japan, how fermented soy milk, isoflavones, could cut ultraviolet damage, and more on health and healing. Then we're going to take a look at several issues that people don't spend a lot of time with. And one of them is The Myth of America's Christian Heritage by Kerry Walters from Pre-Inquiry. We're going to look at the mother of all risks. The insurance giants call for the nations, the G20 nations, to stop bankrolling fossil fuels. Now, this is from Common Dreams, and there's some really good statistics in here that I'm not aware of that are frightening. So who's got your back? You may think it's the insurance companies. If you should have flooding or a hurricane or tornado, don't rely upon that. Also, the United States government is hooked on war. We're obsessed with it. Perpetual war. Who says? Michael Payne from Nation of Change, and I'll give you some of my own insights on that. And then we're going to spend the last part of our program today looking at a clip, an audio clip, called Play It Forward, The Clinton Corruption Machine. And I've chosen this because very few people in the general public would remember the name Mark Rich or his wife Denise Rich. They were both tied to the Clinton Foundation. And why is this important? Because Barack Obama is issuing his final pardons. Now here's the irony. On the one hand, Barack Obama, in an interview was back when he was running for president, talked about how many people are incarcerated, especially people of color, for minor non-threatening drug offenses, like using marijuana. And that's over a half of our entire prison population. But when you go back to the Clinton era, you're talking about more than 7 to 8 million people. Now, each one of those people are a family of four. You're talking about 30 million people approximately who've been adversely affected by our war on drugs or other minor offenses that historically would not have gotten a person incarcerated. So why not simply pardon all of these people who have been imprisoned for a non-violent crime? Wouldn't that be a great gesture? It also would be a great gesture to officially, as President of the United States, by executive order, stop the war on drugs and then have national debates about how dangerous this war has been, just like prohibition caused organized crime. Luckily, Luciano and all of the big gangsters, Al Capone, they all came from prohibition. But he hasn't done that. He's only pardoned several hundred people. But one of the people that Bill Clinton pardoned in his last day in office was a man named Mark Rich. And why would I share this much time, over 22 minutes, on an audio clip, but to let you know how that world of the oligarchs, the 100th of 1%, how they actually function, what they're able to do, how much power they have, how much control over the judicial process, the legislative process, and the media do they have? But they have it. So do you really think that the people who pardoned Mark Rich would be any less capable of pardoning others who were found guilty in crimes against humanity? Other presidents have let their friends get away with this also. That's why we're going to do it, because that's what's coming. After all, guess who's now endorsing Hillary Clinton? The leading godfather of all neoconservative people in America, a man named Kagan, the Koch brothers, the 25 of the leading world polluters. Why are all these major fossil fuel industries, the nuclear industry, the gas hydrofracking industry, the Trans-Pacific Partnership corporations, why are they all in the banks, all lining up behind Hillary Clinton? You don't have to do a lot of thinking to figure that out. So that's our show, so we have a lot to share. Let's begin. Frankincense oil, according to GreenMedInfo, may receive most of the fame and glory, but the humble Boswellia tree from which it is derived can also create another powerful natural medicine. Oil and extracts of the Boswellia have been used for thousands of years to treat all kinds of health conditions. While many of us are familiar with the meditative, cleansing, and enchanting aromas of incense, the very word itself contains the powerful natural medicine from which it is derived. Frankincense, meaning true incense, is a resin that comes from any tree species that belongs to the genus Boswellia. And spreading their branches through the Middle East and Africa and India, this tree's roots run deep in ancient usage and text. And while all Boswellia species can produce frankincense, Boswellia serrata, S-E-R-R-A-T-A, is the species that is adorned in traditional medicinal systems like Ayurveda and Yunani for producing exceptional extracts. It's documented throughout all of their history. In fact, there are over 30 clinical studies published on PubMed.gov, and 28 of these studies use the B. serrata of the Boswellia, and they're finding that it does a lot of good. So I'm just suggesting that if you want to help yourself with cardiovascular disease, with lessening the risk of breast cancer, there's a whole lot of good research out there. So just go up and do some homework, and you'll see that an awful lot of people would be using this herb if they only knew what it did. Let me spell it for you so that you have it. Just write this down. Boswellia. Now, we know that vitamin C is important. There are over 30,000 studies in the peer-reviewed literature on vitamin C. According to Van Andel Research Institute in Denmark, as published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, it showed that when it's used with standard epigenetic treatment for myeloid dysplastic syndrome and acute myeloid leukemia, it's very beneficial. And why? Because it seems like the vitamin C enhanced the drug's ability to impede cancer cell growth and trigger cellular self-destruction in cancer cell lines. Quote, "If the pilot trial is successful, we plan to pursue a larger trial to explore this strategy's potential as a straightforward and cost-effective way to improve the existing therapies," end quote. There are a lot of people who have benefited from vitamin C therapy who have cancer. And then there are people who refuse to give up their orthodox treatment. And there's a small number of oncologists who have principally used, let's say, the orthodox chemotherapy, but then decide to use a change in diet or vitamin C. The problem is, if a person gets better, all the credit goes towards the drug that was used, none towards the vitamin C. And it was Dr. Linus Pauling and Dr. Ewan Cameron at the Vale 11 Hospital in Scotland who decided to do a study. And what they did was this. They took patients who had terminal cancer. They had been proven nothing would reverse their dying. And they had not had chemotherapy. And they gave them high doses of vitamin C every day. Now, by today's standards, these would not be high doses. It was given orally. It was 10,000 milligrams a day. But they had a statistically significant length of time in their death, meaning they lived much longer than those that received a placebo. I remember breaking this story on my radio program with Dr. Pauling, who was a regular contributor. And I knew it would be very shortly thereafter that the cancer establishment would rail against this. It's only anecdotal, it's not a good study, and that's exactly what they did. And in a conversation with Dr. Pauling one evening in New York, and there was a Dr. Abram Hoffer also present, I suggested that he try to put together funding from the alternative physicians in America to do another study, larger, giving even higher doses of vitamin C, and see if he could replicate it, but have another institution outside the United States, like maybe a university in Milan, that is respected, do it so it wasn't he doing it. It was someone else. It was a good idea, but unfortunately, virtually every single doctor who was called, not one donated a penny. And yet they would all praise Linus Pauling, but so much for the so-called humanitarian part of the holistic model. In any case, sure enough, it wasn't long before the Mayo Clinic decided to replicate his work. And replication is one of the foundational pillars of science, meaning if you come up with a finding, others have to come up with a similar result using the same protocol. Here's the rub. What if they don't use the same protocol? What if a pharmaceutical company has a university where they have contributed money and they chair the Department of Pharmacology, so therefore they control the chairman and the chairman controls what gets green-lighted in their institution? And what if they do a study, but they don't do it exactly the same way? They don't want the good results. And so the world doesn't know they didn't do the exact protocol using the same dosage or same source. But the media will joyfully pick it up and say, study debunks vitamin C. And so that's what they did. So Pauling analyzed the Mayo Clinic's findings, supposedly duplicating, and found that it was grossly flawed. So we began a letter-writing campaign to the Mayo Clinic asking them to come on the program and debate Dr. Pauling or Dr. Cameron. And also, we pointed out all their discrepancies, and I believe this was published in the Townsend Letter for Doctors and Physicians. I wrote a couple articles on this, and we hung on to this for quite some time. But what it was, it showed us that behind the scenes in science today, there's proprietary science, there's corporate science. They have so much control over the media, and you're not aware of it. And they can get away with anything they want to get away with because they're not going to be held accountable. So anyhow, to this day, we still don't have those studies where one group gets vitamin C in high doses, another group, and to do it right, you would be giving, let's say, 50,000 milligrams 3 days a week intravenous. Another group gets the chemotherapy agent, a single chemotherapy agent, and a third group gets a combination of both. And then you follow these patients to the end to see how, you know, what worked best. And if you can't do that, then you can't really say that one boosted the other because you don't know who's controlling the outcome. And now, through Dr. Angel, who was the former 20-plus-year editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, she's now a professor at Harvard, she says so much of science today has been compromised in its integrity. And she was at the heart of it. She saw it firsthand, as have others. So on the one hand, I don't know how they could produce something at the Proceedings National Academy of Science without them saying, hold on a second, do three studies, just as I mentioned, one with the nutrient, one with the drug, and one with the nutrient drug together. Then it'll be an interesting study. From Kyoto University, as published in the Journal of Vascular Surgery, drinking a polyphenol packed green tea could help to prevent a deadly condition in the body's main artery. Now, the Japanese research team reported that polyphenols, and that's in the nation's favorite drink, green tea, could offer benefit in preventing abdominal aneurysms, expansion, and that's a very serious condition characterized by destruction of the body's main artery. And it's life-threatening, and it occurs when the main artery becomes overstretched and bloated, resulting in a vasodilation, and if left untreated, a rupture that leads to death 50% of the time. Quote, abdominal aortic aneurysms often go unnoticed because there are no symptoms until they burst. If a patient is lucky and bloating is found before rupture, it needs to be treated surgically, such as by transplanting an arterial blood vessel or inserting a stent graft. At the moment, there are no pharmacological treatments. However, the new study from Kyoto University found that in this particular laboratory study, rats fed a green tea extract containing the EGCG developed AAA less frequently than rats that were not given the polyphenol. Quote, the type of polyphenol found in green tea has recently been shown to generate elastin, an essential protein that gives the artery its stretchy yet sturdy texture. Considering that abdominal arterial aneurysms are caused by inflammation and the degradation of elastin components in the arterial wall, we thought drinking green tea may help show promise for treatment. And see exactly what happened. So, if you have a problem with your heart and if you have a problem with your arteries, by all means now, consider using that. And also from the Central Institute in Japan, they found that fermented soy milk, isoflavones, could cut ultraviolet damage. If you consume some soy milk each day, fermented soy milk, it protects against the ultraviolet radiation damage by increasing the number of isoflavone components in the body. And that means that your skin would be protected, you'd be less likely to develop cancer. But also, it also helps protect you in your overall immune system. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. A lot more to come. Please stay with us. Back in a moment.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through,
the whole day,
just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on.
Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. This coming Saturday, we will be having our next health support group. We only have 2 meetings left. That's it. In 3 months study with some major improvements that we've seen. So you got to be there from 3 to 6. Okay? And then we'll let the public know the final results. Couple things. According to Common Dreams, warning that climate change amounts to the mother of all risks, 3 of the world's biggest insurers, and that means insurance companies, this week are demanding that the G20 countries, those are the top countries in the world, stop bankrolling the fossil fuel industry. Multinational insurance giants Aviva, Aegon, and Amlin, which together manage $1.2 trillion in assets, released a statement this week calling for the leaders of the world's biggest economies to commit to ending coal, oil, and gas subsidies within 4 years. Quote, climate change in particular represents the mother of all risks to business and to society as a whole, and that risk is magnified by the way in which fossil fuel subsidies distort the energy market. Now, here's some figures that surprise me. I thought you'd like to hear this. According to a recent report by the International Monetary Fund, fossil fuel companies receive $5.3 trillion a year in global subsidies, a figure that included the real costs associated with damage to the environment and human health that are foisted on populations but not paid by polluters. Here's my takeaway on this. Right now, for the first time in American history, as we speak today, there are three tropical storms threatening the United States. By the way, this has never happened before. We're seeing something that is so out of the ordinary. And the three tropical storm systems are going to hit simultaneously, and a fourth could also be on the way. Two back-to-back storms, currently Hurricanes Madeline and Lester, could hit Hawaii's Big Island this week, and two others are forecast to impact North Carolina and Florida's Gulf Coast, hitting up around in the northwest section of Florida, Tallahassee, but also going over towards Louisiana. If either storm makes landfall on the Big Island as a hurricane, it could be the first since record-keeping began. This is from Jeff Masters on Wonderblog. Quote, National Hurricane Center has issued a hurricane watch for the Florida Gulf Coast from the Acolyte River to Indian Pass and the Tropical Storm Watch for the Florida Gulf Coast west of Indian Pass to the Walton Bay County line. Wouldn't guess from Tropical Depression 9's appearance on satellite imagery, though, that storm could become a hurricane by today. Then it goes on to talk about what people are not paying attention to. We're now seeing part of the consequences of the last hurricane that went through Louisiana. They're in one parish alone, that's just one, and Louisiana has a lot of parishes. There were 80,000 homes damaged, and most of those homes that were flooded cannot be restored. They literally have to strip them down and throw everything away and start from scratch. And they got to get building permits to do that. Here's the problem. They were not in floodplains because they hadn't had floods. They had rain, but not floods. As a result, people didn't have flood insurance. As a result, you're going to see massive poverty and bankruptcies, and you're going to see just an enormous blight. The state's poor, the state's in deficit, the state can't afford to come in one parish, rebuild 85,000 homes. All over the state, you're talking about well over 500,000 homes, affecting several million people. That was a once in a 500-year storm. We have had seven once in a 500-year-old storms in the last 14 months. We also had the worst storm in the history of West Virginia, worst storm in the history of Virginia, worst storm in the history of Wisconsin, and it goes on. We've had some of the worst fires. We've had over 3,625 fires alone in California since January. So that's part of our problem. So here's the takeaway message. We must have universal insurance. We must be able to inform people the truth about where they're living if it's not sustainable. Just tell people the truth about living where you're running out of water, you're on an earthquake fault line, you're going to be hit with a hurricane, you're in Tornado Alley. Let people know the truth, because no one's going to insure them. The insurance companies are going to get out of this, and the people are going to be left without any resources or plan B. So let's wake up. It's here. It's not going to wait. It's going to get worse. I'm Gary Nall. Now let's go straight to our Play It Forward. We'll play as much of this as we can, time permitting. The Clinton corruption proven. We're using Mark Rich as the example. When you're very rich and very powerful, and you have friends like the Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, how things go differently for you versus if you're the average citizen.
Did Hillary Clinton take money from the wealthy and the powerful? Who are these wealthy and powerful people? For starters, Denise Rich. Denise Rich is the ex-wife of billionaire fugitive Mark Rich. Mark Rich's criminal history with the United States dates back to the Iran hostage crisis. In 1979, the United States Embassy was overtaken by hundreds of Iranian protesters, taking 90 people hostage, including 63 U.S. citizens.
Mainly students at Tehran University have taken over the embassy. "We are not occupiers," they said. "We have thrown out the occupiers." But instead of chasing all the Americans out of the compound, the Iranians imprisoned them in a building somewhere on these grounds. They have been hostages ever since.
These events were portrayed in the beginning of the popular film Argo. The attack on the U.S. Embassy and the taking of the hostages was a violation of diplomatic immunity as laid out at the Vienna Congress of 1814, an agreement that even the Nazis had respected during World War II. This takeover was supported by Iran's new leader, the Ayatollah Khomeini, who referred to the United States as the Great Satan.
"For a government to applaud mob violence and terrorism, for a government actually to support and in effect participate in the taking and the holding of hostages is unprecedented in human history."
President Jimmy Carter said that this attack on the U.S. Embassy was an act of terrorism.
"And that we refuse to permit the use of terrorism and the seizure and the holding of hostages to impose political demands. I am ordering that we discontinue purchasing of any oil from Iran for delivery to this country."
By executive order, President Carter forbade all financial transactions with Iran, according to Carter's executive order number 12205. American citizen Mark Rich broke this law, using his Swiss company to buy 8 to 10 million metric tons of oil per year from the National Iranian Oil Company. The U.S. hostage crisis ended 444 days after the embassy takeover. It cost Jimmy Carter the presidency, with the Ayatollah Khomeini releasing the hostages minutes after Ronald Reagan was sworn in on January 20, 1981. In 1983, Rudy Giuliani was appointed U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York and pursued criminal charges against Rich under the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, otherwise known as the RICO Act. Under this act, Giuliani could freeze all of Rich's personal and business assets before the case even went to trial. Giuliani would later use this same act in the early 1990s to nab mafioso John Gotti. Mark Rich fled the country and shortly thereafter attempted to have two steamer trunks full of business documents smuggled out of the U.S. and join him in Switzerland. The plane was stopped moments before takeoff and the documents seized. On September 19, 1983, Rudy Giuliani brought 51 counts of fraud, racketeering, tax evasion, and other charges against Mark Rich and his associates, particularly Pincus Green. Rich faced up to 325 years in jail if convicted. Rich remained in Switzerland with his wife Denise Rich. He continued to do business without interruption because the extradition treaty between the United States and Switzerland does not include tax crimes. Under U.S. law, the accused cannot be tried in their absence. Rich was put on the FBI's 10 most wanted list, and between 1979 and 1994 made an estimated $2 billion selling oil to apartheid South Africa, Gaddafi's Libya, Kim Il-sung's North Korea, Fidel Castro's Cuba, and the Soviet Union during the Cold War. Over the next decade, federal agents came close to nabbing Mark Rich several times. They missed him at Heathrow Airport in London, and another time watched helplessly as his private plane changed course in midair instead of landing in Finland as expected. Events like these supported the notion that the Riches had a source within international law enforcement. Mark Rich sold his company in 1994, having made billions, and was looking to clear his name. His team of lawyers and assistants included a former Israeli spy, Avner Azoulay, and Jack Quinn, a lawyer who was President Clinton's White House counsel from 1995 to 1997 and Vice President Al Gore's chief of staff from 1993 to 1995. In 2000, U.S. Attorney Mary Jo White again denied Rich's lawyers any possibility of negotiating, stating that it was the firm policy of the Southern District of New York not to negotiate dispositions of criminal charges with fugitives. The lawyers of Mark Rich now focused on the possibility of a presidential pardon. As stated in the U.S. Constitution, a pardon allows the accused to go free of any or all charges, except if he or she is accused of impeachment. In order to receive a pardon, the petition is submitted to a special pardon attorney at the Department of Justice, examined and, if approved, sent to the Associate Attorney General, who is the number 3 in the department. Then the Attorney General advises the President as to whether he should accept or refuse the petition. Rich's security expert, Azule, recommended avoiding the traditional pardon procedure of going through the Department of Justice because, if we do this, the story would immediately explode in the media. Eric Holder was the Deputy Attorney General at the Department of Justice at this time. He was the only person at the Department of Justice consulted about the possibility of Mark Rich's pardon. Jack Quinn reached out to Eric Holder, and in the late fall of 2000, Deputy Attorney General Holder advised that it should be submitted directly to the White House.
Mr. Holder told me that he had said to the White House counsel he was neutral leaning towards favorable on the pardon.
Jack Quinn prepared the petition in late November 2000, and a couple weeks later he submitted it to Bill Clinton on December 11th, avoiding the press. Attached to that petition was a personal letter from Denise Rich, whom Mark Rich divorced in 1996, awarding her $200 million. Denise stated in her letter to Bill on behalf of Mark's pardon petition, "I'm writing as a friend and as an admirer of yours." According to the New York Times, Bill Clinton considered Denise Rich to be one of his closest friends. Since 1992, while still married to fugitive Mark Rich, Denise Rich donated more than $1.1 million to the Democratic Party. She was especially close to Bill and Hillary Clinton, whose election campaigns she helped finance, and she donated $450,000 to Bill Clinton's presidential library in Little Rock, Arkansas. During the Clinton administration, Denise Rich visited the White House 19 times while still married to fugitive Mark Rich. In 1998, when the president appeared in public for the first time after the publication of independent counsel Kenneth Starr's report on the Monica Lewinsky affair, it was at an event in Denise's penthouse. Clinton also appeared as a speaker at a fundraiser for the GNP Foundation, a cancer research organization Denise founded. Bill Clinton can be seen here in an ad for the GNP Foundation.
There has never been a better time to invest money in cancer research, ever. And it is highly likely that the money you invest in this project will actually directly lead to the dramatic acceleration of cures for cancer, preventions for cancer, and the savings of other children's lives.
One week after President Clinton received the petition for Rich's pardon, Denise also spoke directly to the president about the issue on December 20th at the National Medal of Arts and the National Humanities Medal. Denise told him in a private moment that the pardon would mean a lot to me. On January 20th, 2001, Mark Rich was pardoned. How does this relate to Hillary Clinton? Denise Rich gave $100,000 to Hillary Clinton's campaign when she was running for New York Senator in 2000 against none other than Republican candidate Rudy Giuliani, the man who attempted to prosecute Denise Rich's former husband 17 years earlier. Giuliani would eventually cancel his bid due to a diagnosis of prostate cancer and marital woes.
I've decided that what I should do is to put my health first. This is not the right time for me to run for office.
Giuliani stayed on as mayor of New York City, winning Times Person of the Year for his efforts in rebuilding New York City after the attack on the World Trade Center. Hillary's new opponent was Rick Lazio.
I don't want any more evasion. The truth is, Tim, is that Mrs. Clinton has been airing millions of dollars in soft money ads. It's the height of hypocrisy to talk about soft money when she's been raising soft money by the bucket loads out in Hollywood and spending all that money on negative advertising. Height of hypocrisy.
Hillary would defeat Lazio, winning the election on November 7th, 2000.
Tonight, I'm just overwhelmed by the kindness and support that I've been given.
The petition for Mark Rich's pardon would arrive on Bill Clinton's desk 29 days later. Hillary Clinton was sworn in as United States Senator on January 3rd, 2001. 17 days later, on January 20th, 2001, President Bill Clinton pardoned Mark Rich within hours of leaving office. Thank you. Federal prosecutors and Congress investigated the pardon, and in 2002, a House of Representatives committee concluded Denise Rich swayed the action through donations to the Clinton Library and campaign. Denise Rich bought her ex-husband's pardon by donating money to Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign and Bill's presidential library. In recent years, Denise Rich decided to renounce her U.S. citizenship to save tens of millions of dollars in taxes, selling her 24-room, $65 million penthouse on Fifth Avenue in New York City.
So now we're standing in a $65 million penthouse listing, the largest ever on Fifth Avenue.
That's true.
This apartment is owned by Denise Rich, who's a very famous
songwriter. You know, not that many people have recording studios with a view of Central Park on Fifth Avenue. And in fact, I don't think anyone does.
Why is this apartment listing now for sale?
Ah, good question. The owner is not here very often anymore. It's a big apartment. She had kids living here with her. They don't live here anymore. She spends most of her time away. And she needs to, you know, she wants to downsize a little. She doesn't need a big, big place.
The public outcry for the pardon was immediate and relentless. The LA Times reported former President Jimmy Carter as saying, "I don't think there is any doubt that some of the factors in his pardon were attributable to his large gifts. In my opinion, that was disgraceful." As quoted in the book, The King of Oil, William Safire, a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the New York Times, said that the pardon was the most flagrant abuse of the presidential pardon in U.S. history. Rudy Giuliani stated in the same book that he was flabbergasted, and it took me about a day to actually absorb the fact that the President of the United States actually pardoned one of our most notorious fugitives. Howard Safer, former New York City Fire Commissioner and former New York City Police Commissioner, told Larry King that he was outraged because this sends a message to the criminals around the world that if you have influence, if you have money, and if you have access, you can put out a sign that says, "Justice for Sale." According to mentor and former counsel to the Clinton White House, Judge Abner Mikva said President Obama was very, very dismayed by the Mark Rich pardon and the basis on which it appears to have been granted. World-renowned and respected self-made billionaire Warren Buffett said that Mark Rich was a pariah. For every one person that knew he was a terrible guy beforehand, there's 100 or 1,000 now. Money leads to bad things in politics. As for the Clintons, they have continued to use their political clout, receiving massive payoffs from international resources disguised as speaking fees.
It has been reported you've made $5 million making speeches. The president's made more than $100 million.
Well, if you have no reason to remember, but we came out of the White House not only dead broke, but in debt. Money when we got there, and we struggled to, you know, piece together the resources for mortgages for houses.
As Hillary has stated, the Clintons left the White House broke in January 2001. Through their Clinton Global Initiative, also known as the Clinton Foundation, Bill Clinton has funneled monies from speaking engagements worldwide in exchange for political favors, as heavily researched and examined in Clinton Cash. As of April 2016, the Amazon review for this book was overwhelmingly positive and bipartisan. If you check this personally, please do so immediately. It's been recently found that the pro-Clinton super PAC, called Correct the Record, has spent $1 million trying to sway Bernie Sanders supporters on social media, addressing thousands of people on Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, and Instagram. This constitutes propaganda, and these are the exact tactics employed by Vladimir Putin, whose government hires hundreds of Russians to post pro-Kremlin propaganda online under fake identities, including on Twitter, in order to create the illusion of a massive army of supporters. Clinton Cash examined the Clintons' finances, going from broke in 2001 to amassing $130 million before taxes in only 15 years. Mark Rich died in 2013. But his business partners, lawyers, advisors, and friends have showered millions of dollars on the Clintons following the pardon. The Clinton Foundation is marketed as a philanthropist's paradise, but it turns out it's a sunny place for shady people.
A lot to cover on this latest controversy about the Clinton Foundation and whether it will impact the Clinton presidential campaign. The New York Times the other day had a very good story. If you haven't read it, folks, go online and find it. About it, at the time, the United States government was making a deal with Russia to allow Russia to expand its control over uranium. Bill Clinton is getting contributions from Canadian businessmen who are involved in this deal to the Clinton Foundation. He goes over to Russia and gives a big speech paid for by a bank that is involved in this transaction. And now the New York Times is saying Secretary Clinton, candidate Clinton, has some answering to do.
But there's always the Mark Rich question. Why did he give that guy, the pardon?
Here's another example. In November 2015, a Washington Post article that compliments the Clintons for their ability to raise so much money actually has Denise Rich on the cover of the article, essentially praising this corruption. In the same article, the journalists praise Frank Giustra as being one of the elite donors to contribute to the Clinton Foundation, donating $25 million. Giustra was named in the April 2016 Panama Papers scandal, hoarding money in overseas bank accounts to avoid paying taxes. Gilbert Chigore was a former business associate of Mark Rich and donator to the Clinton Foundation. He was also implicated in the Panama Papers scandal. Before the Panama Papers scandal broke, these same people were examined in Clinton Cash, published in May of 2015. Author of Clinton Cash, Peter Schweizer, was interviewed by reporter and President Bill Clinton's former Director of Communications, George Stephanopoulos.
Unfit for the presidency.
Well, I think the real question here, George, is when you ever have an issue of the flow of funds to political candidates, whether that's to their campaigns, whether that's to private foundations, whether that's to their spouse, is there evidence of a pattern of favorable decisions being made for those individuals? And I think the point that we make in the book is that there's a troubling pattern. There are dozens of examples of that occurring. Some people, I think particularly the Clinton camp, would say that these are all coincidence. I don't think when you're talking about 12 instances, you're talking coincidence. I think you're talking trend.
These are President Clinton's responses to Clinton Cash during an interview with NBC's Nightly News. The interview was rebroadcast by right-leaning news network Fox.
There has been a very deliberate attempt to take the foundation down. We did disclose all the foreign governments. There was no attempt to hide them. The guy that filled out the forms made an error. It's not like we didn't tell everybody who gave us the money. The guy put it on the wrong form. There's this big nefarious strategy to exercise terrible influence over the American government by talking wealthy people in countries and then to give them money to help the poor people. That's the theory of the case. And I just don't believe over the long run, the American people won't figure that out.
When asked about the allegations within Clinton Cash, Hillary has brushed off the accusations as simple Republican attacks.
Secretary Clinton, your reaction, please, to these book allegations. Did foreign entities receive any special treatment for making any kind of donations to the foundation or your husband?
Well, we're back into the political season, and therefore we will be subjected to all kinds of distraction and attacks. I'm ready for that. I know that that comes, unfortunately, with the territory. It is, I think, worth noting that the Republicans seem to be talking only about me. I don't know what they talk about if I weren't in the race, but I am in the race, and hopefully we'll get onto the issues, and I look forward to that.
She has been using the same divergent tactic since being First Lady.
The great story here for anybody willing to find it and write about it and explain it is this vast right-wing conspiracy that has been conspiring against my husband since the day he announced for president.
And this has been a Clinton playbook. When you are criticized, just say the person attacking us is political. They are partisan. It doesn't matter if there are actual facts in here. And again, the New York Times did get some of its information from this conservative author who's writing the book Clinton Cash. He's a conservative. There's no question about that. He gave some of this information. He said, look what I found, to the New York Times, which not independently verified it and added its own reporting.
Hillary herself has amassed a small fortune from paid speaking engagements with Wall Street special interests, such as Goldman Sachs, claiming that she will still be able to police Wall Street, even though they paid her enormous sums of money.
One of the things that Senator Sanders points to and a lot of your critics point to is you made three speeches for Goldman Sachs. You were paid $675,000 for three speeches. Was that a mistake? I mean, was that a bad error in judgment?
Look, I made speeches to lots of groups. I told them what I thought. I answered questions.
But did you have to be paid $675,000?
Well, I don't know. That's what they offered.
But in all of my years of public life, I have never profited from public service. I've earned every cent. And in all of my years of public life, I have never obstructed justice. And I think, too, that I can say that in my years of public life, that I welcome this kind of examination, because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
The American presidency is the toughest job in the world. American lives literally depend on who is leading the country. Because of the duty, it's the most rigorous interview process. Former presidential candidates have had to give over their health records, their college school records, their taxes. But Hillary Clinton has refused to release the transcripts for speeches she made for Wall Street. Even the Washington Post wrote that she pulled in at least $69 million in political contributions from the employees and PACs of banks, insurance companies, and securities and investment firms. The Associated Press has stated in an article from April 21, 2016, that almost all of the 82 corporations, trade associations, and other groups that paid for or sponsored Clinton's speeches have actively sought to sway the government with these special interests following Clinton to the White House if she won. When will this corruption end? Do not elect this corruption back into power, because it will not lead the free world. It starts and ends with the people. Vote out special interests. Vote out corruption. Vote against Hillary Clinton. Because if we do elect Hillary to be our next president, this is how her and her husband will run the White House.
Well, the Clinton Foundation, Hillary Clinton has left the board of the Clinton Foundation to run for president. The foundation has taken some heat for taking foreign donations. You and I have gone at this and criticized them for it right here in this spot. Now they say they're going to stop that almost. They will continue to take money from Australia, Canada, Germany, the Netherlands, Norway, and the United Kingdom. The good guys, democracies, if you will. Is that okay?
No. You can't be a little bit pregnant. She's going to be president of the United States. These are allies, but they also have interests and ways they might want to influence our government, and they're giving money to a potential presidential candidate's family foundation. That should not happen.
All the sources can be found below. Play it forward.
That was a sobering insight, wasn't it? And it just allows us to understand how much power there is in the hands of so few people, and how they all seem to work together. Now, I want to go on to some other things here. On the environmental segment, there's another news update, and this is from News Target. They're looking at beached whale carcasses and all over Europe. And according to the latest news, they're finding that 1,000 whales and dolphins and porpoises, highest concentration they've ever seen of man-made toxins, were in their bodies. Now, once you have that much toxic material in there, especially if there are neurotoxins, they could disrupt the navigational capacity of the whale, just like if you have too much mercury. In fact, there used to be something called the Mad Hatters, and the concept of the Mad Hatters came from men who would sit by machines and mold the felt that went inside the hat, and to make it pliable, they would dip it in a water mercury solution, and then that would be on their fingers, and they'd breathe it in, and at a very young age, they would go mad. And it was because their brain had an overload of mercury, and mercury is an extraordinarily dangerous neurotoxin. But it's not just humans that are adversely affected. Birds can be affected when they are eating something that is sensitive to them. Just recently, just this week, when they were spraying, I think it was in Virginia or South Carolina for the Zika virus, they killed millions and millions of bees almost instantly. That's how sensitive they were. Well, how safe can a pesticide be if instantly it kills one of the most important pollinators there are? One-third of all the food we eat is pollinated by bees. And that's also true of the neonicotinoids, which destroy the bees. We've seen colony collapse where you don't even see a dead bee. Now, as a beekeeper, I've had as many as 144 hives at a time. You notice where the bee's dying. And sometimes all the bees are gone. And that's because when they've been exposed to neonicotinoids, they frequently lose their navigational capacity. They don't know where they belong. They don't know how to get back to where they had come from. That's how bad these are. Now, scientists within the EPA have been aware of this, but they have been gagged. They have not been allowed to talk about how bad it is because the big deep pocket donors, the agricultural companies who have a great deal of input into who gets selected for the U.S. Department of, the Agriculture Department, Tom Vilsack, they control it. So here we have dolphins and porpoises beaching themselves. Animals do not voluntarily commit suicide, especially whole pods, especially families. If anything, they do everything they can to protect one another. In fact, something very touching was seen recently where a pod of killer whales were found to be giving regurgitated food to one of the whales who was injured and could not feed. They were looking after this whale so it wouldn't die. That takes consciousness. These are true sentient beings. So we're dumping everything imaginable into the oceans. We're dumping it into our rivers and our waterways. We've already found that a lot of rivers in the United States are polluted with medicines. And so what do? Well, instead of warning people this water is not safe to drink, we simply politically spin it that, well, you would have to drink a whole lot of it before you would get sick. And that's not a way to approach a problem. So when you see masses of whales and dolphins dying, it's because of either disruption of their navigational system through HARP or some of the different testing apparatuses that the Navy and others use, or it's because of pollution in the water. Also, Fukushima radiation plagues the Pacific Ocean now. Go back to June of 1915. The largest whale stranding ever documented in history took place on the coast of Chile. Toxic algae blooms fueled by rising oceans were deemed responsible for the incident. But there are other factors at play which surpass the forces of nature. The Fukushima Daiichi plant has been pumping a steady stream of radioactive poison in the Pacific Ocean, and it should therefore come as no surprise that a series of rare whales have beached themselves recently on the shores of Japan. And it's not just whales that are the victims of nuclear disaster. Back in April of 2015, a staggering 160 dolphins beached themselves nearly 50 miles from Fukushima. The dolphins showed signs of white lungs, which is associated with radiation and radiation poisoning. And survivors of the atomic bomb and children near the Chernobyl disaster exhibited similar lung problems. So just take a look at nature, look at what's happening, and you'll see that right now we do not have either the political will or the political power to change any of this, because the neocons are controlling everything. Even Brazil, where there was a more humanistic liberal president, she was ousted by a completely corrupt, radical right-wing, neoconservative, U.S.-friendly group. So there goes all the safeguards for the people of Brazil. These are just the things going on in the world, and nature is our canary in the coal mine. I'm Gary Nall. Hope you all have a wonderful